Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The 4 Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving no matter how much technology evolves. We're talking about real differentiators here like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this: AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The 4 Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, K-E-Y-S. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. And download your free copy.
Where people get in trouble is when there's not alignment and where there's very different perspectives and people are not able to talk about it. And everyone's kind of, what really happens is at every level, even from the senior level, is people internally think they know where the organization's going or where the team's going, and they're operating out of their own perspective. And we don't really have the conversations with each other to really listen and to be creative. You know, what your podcast is about, how do we be creative together? And that's really where the creativity comes. It's from listening to the different perspectives and holding the space for the conversations. And I don't think many of us know how to have these conversations. I think it's we really get stuck in thinking my way is right and then pushing for my way. So I think the skill that's needed nowadays more than ever is to, I call it having an open mindset and to be open and curious and open-hearted, open-minded.
I'm Srini Rao, and this is the Unmistakable Creative Podcast, where you get a window into the stories and insights of the most innovative and creative minds who've started movements, built thriving businesses, written best-selling books, and created insanely interesting art. For more, check out our 500-episode archive at unmistakablecreative.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
As creators, we're always on the move. Whether it's a live podcast event, a pop-up shop, or a workshop, we're constantly interacting with community, and that's where Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe comes in. Imagine this. You're at a live event, a listener loves your merch, or a participant wants to sign up for your course on the spot. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, you can accept their payments right there and then, right from your iPhone, so there's no extra hardware or no delays. Total game changer. It's not just for creators. Any business owner can do this. It's about making transactions smoother and much more personal, growing your business in your way. We've been using Stripe for our products and courses for a long time, and now with Tap to Pay on iPhone, you can take your business to the next level too. So visit stripe.com/tapiphone to learn more. Remember, folks, with Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, your business is always at your fingertips.
Anne, welcome to The Unmistakable Creative. Thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, it is my pleasure to have you here. So I came across your story because you wrote in a little bit about what you guys did. And I was very intrigued because of the fact that you focus on maximizing people's potential, which we will get to. But before we get to all of that, I would like to start by asking, what did your parents do for a living? And what impact did that end up having on the choices that you've made with your life and your career?
Okay, well, thank you. I come from a large family. There were six kids, and that just had an impact right away because I got to immediately start thinking about organizational development and how people work together. My father had a number of jobs. I was thinking about it. One of the jobs that probably most influenced me about his career is he worked for his brother, who was a priest, and it was for World Villages for Children. So basically, it was an organization, and it still is going on today. My uncle has passed away, but it was an it started orphanages all over the world. And so that had a profound influence on me. My uncle actually was a priest, and he devoted his life to helping children, helping all kind of people, but starting these orphanages. And now they've moved to centers, like boarding schools and then helping people back in the community and helping the poor. So that had a huge influence on me. I've always been, committed to like making a difference. That's been like a personal mission for me. How do I make a difference in the world? So that had a big influence. My father then, he did many other jobs, worked for the government, but he also always had like a personal ministry on the side. Like he, helped prisoners or worked with the elderly. So that had a big influence on me. My mother, was actually a psychiatric nurse, and she also had a different view, though. She always helped people in the neighborhood, and so that influence, always trying to be of service, making a difference in people's lives, and we were, big family, so we always were like focused on family and working together. So there were plenty of challenges, and like any family. Mm-hmm. But I do think it's funny. I was reflecting on that question. I don't often give them enough credit, probably, of making the influence. Probably the biggest influence they actually had was my parents did not get along at all. They were opposite extremes almost on every. I used to give them when I was in graduate school. I'd give them personality tests and all kind of different tests, and almost every test I could come up with, they were both at the opposite ends. So that's actually what had the most influence on me. Since I've been a child, it seems like my question has been, how do we get people who have different perspectives understanding each other and working together? Because they both were good people, but they really did not like each other, mm-hmm. And they really did not work well together. So in a way, I've had that question. I'm much older now, but that's been kind of a pervasive life question for me. So that's probably how they influenced me quite a bit.
Wow. It sounds to me like faith plays
a substantial role in your life? Does it as an adult? And how did it play a role when you were growing up? And have your spiritual beliefs changed with age?
Yeah, interesting. I've actually have had like a spiritual path. I did grow up, my family was very Catholic. I actually even, I can't believe I'm telling you this already, but I did major in theology as an undergraduate. And I even did work with some cynical nuns for a year doing like workshops and meditation and type things. But I've really grown to be less, the religion. It's but more like more being open minded, connected with people. So it's less of a the traditional churches, are less focused for me than being open to all different perspectives.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned a family of six. What are the lessons in human behavior and social relationships and navigating such a large group of people that you have learned that you have applied to your life going forward?
Yeah, no, these are good questions. I have, there were six kids. I was the oldest, and I had the opportunity really early to kind of, my parents were busy. You can imagine I only have one child who I adopted now, and I can't imagine they had six. So I had the opportunity right away early to kind of manage things. I'm kind of a natural manager and leader. So I immediately took care of my siblings, and then I would, create little camps for them. Didn't have a lot of money growing up, so I would, create the camps for my siblings and all the other kids in the neighborhood. And so that's how I kind of grew into my career. I always thought, well, why don't we, build a community? I would always bring together all the neighborhood kids and put on a play, say, or some kind of show, and then do it for the parents. And so kind of always, it seemed like there was always a community with a lot of people. And there were a lot of different perspectives. So I think that's partly how I grew up, is how do we manage, all of these different points of view about how things should be and how life should be? How do we kind of organize it? So, I think that's kind of been what I've been thinking about. How do we do that? And basically, I learned that you have to be open to all the different points of view and work not to make it right. And I think my parents were critical. And each thought their way was right. So I think that's how I managed to learn that this might be a better avenue. And we all have different points of view and different, everyone's got a different personality in this large family. And we're all very close, actually. So that was something that was emphasized by the family and by the parents. And so actually, I'm pretty close to all of these siblings and pretty much stay in touch with them regularly now. But we all are quite different.
How did that dynamic of a really large family inform your role as a parent? Like, how has it been? What have you applied as a parent that you learned from the family dynamic that you were raised in, especially because you were in a massive family? Now you have just one child.
Yeah, no, that was it. It's a great question. I think it's, I've been committed to being a, it's very important to me to be a, a healthy parent. And to, create an a positive environment for my daughter. I adopted her when she was 1 year old. So I think I do find I was a bit older parent. So I knew that I did not want to have a large family. Even though I loved the large family that I'm a part of, I think it's hard to get attention and focus when you have quite a large family. So I chose to have a small family. Small child, just one child, actually. But I have supported her in trying to build community. In fact, when we adopted her, we went with 11 other families, and we adopted all of us together. So we've created that as a family for her, even though, so she has like 11 other sisters that she calls her sisters. She was adopted from China, my daughter. Mm-hmm. So I still tried to keep the connection, but didn't do it all in my house.
Yeah, the other part of this that I'm really wondering about is you said she was adopted from China. Do you think about the fact that you've adopted somebody who's come from a different culture, and yet there's no way to integrate that culture because of the fact that she was adopted and really didn't grow up with that culture. What of her, what part of her heritage plays a role in all of this?
I know these are good questions. That was something we did think quite a bit about, because a lot of my work has been around diversity, about creating environments of inclusion. It's something we really did give quite a bit of thought to. And after we adopted her, I took her to Chinatown, you know, every week. Took her to Chinese school. I mean, we've celebrated in the Chinese, different holidays. And we're very open, when we talk about, that we have different, she learned early and we have different skin colors. So it's been, we've helped her to be proud of being Chinese. And we talk about being like a multicultural, an open multicultural family. We talked to her about it. I talked to her about her birth parents, even though she won't know those. We don't know them, and about her orphanage, et cetera. So, it's something that we're well aware of. We talk about what her experience is, being in a mixed family, and it's very difficult because you're not when you're adopted, like she's in with Caucasian parents, and yet she is Chinese, so that's always something that's with her, and we're just basically well aware of it. We talk about it and just try to think about how to. Just help her to be, she's very open to different cultures. So that's been a plus how we've tried to create it. But, it's a factor that it's one of the factors. Everybody has issues that they face. And she's quite aware of it. And she's very conscious about like how she wants to, support diversity. So it's been a part of our life,
Mm-hmm.
Both my husband and I, we are committed to, and we've always kind of been focused on diversity,
yeah,
and inclusion.
So after studying theology, where did you go career-wise, and what planted the seed for this notion of doing work around inclusion, diversity, and ultimately, how do you get from there to studying potential?
Yeah, thank you. Well, I did study, I majored in undergraduate psychology and theology. Actually, even in high school, I was thinking about diversity. And what I found when I was a high school student, I know you like these kind of things, is I felt, oh my gosh, there's so many different groups. So I put up a sign and said, do you feel like you're not part of the in crowd? Come to room 101. And then, I had the biggest club I created in the school. And from there, we started like peer counseling. Or now we'd call that peer coaching, and all kind of things. So again, it's been probably just because of where I came from, I've had that focus on diversity and understanding each other and communicating like from the beginning. So that's how I got to my career. I really tried to reflect on how do I use this interest and my, interest in getting people to talk to each other, my interest in psychology, theology, and then after college, I did work with this order of nuns and put on workshops on communicating, on meditating, and all of that. Then I realized I was kind of doing counseling. I realized, whoa, all these people are having problems at work. Why don't we change the workplaces? I was young then. I didn't realize how hard that might be. So then I went and worked in a company to get the experience of being in a company. And it was an international insurance company. I was doing it to see what it's like so I could think of how to change organizations. So I kind of think big. It was a great experience. I became manager very quickly. And I had a role where I worked directly with the senior leaders in the company. So I was able to create a whole office. And it was part of the government affairs. And I got to manage a corporate communication. So I kind of very quickly, very young, was able to move into a management role and create products. So I just started creating products around leadership. And I started just getting people together and getting them to talk to each other. So then I tried to figure out, well, how do I get some doctorate or some degrees, extra education to support this. So I pretty much started doing consulting right from that company, just kind of made it up and started doing it. And then I did find over some time, I found that it was very, this is some years ago, so it was the field of organizational development. So I worked with Warner Burke and found a program at Columbia University. So I did study organizational psychology, which was quite new at the time, and it really moved into how to do organizational change. So that's what I found, that I just love going into a team, going into a system, and getting people to talk with each other and figure out how to work together. Mm-hmm. So I started this quite many years ago, but that was my, that was how I moved right from, you know, I worked for a number of years as a manager, saw a lot of, had a lot of challenges of just figuring out things through being a manager and having some, I was fortunate because I got to work with the president of that company, got to help with speech writing. So I had a real real bird's eye view of leadership management, trying to influence a company. And it was a large Fortune 50 company. So I had a lot of great experience there, moved into then right away. I decided after working in a company for a while that I would kind of what you, I think what you're about is how do you think about, you know, being creative and doing what you want. So I really started my own business really young, 1984. I just decided, wait, why don't I just start my own business? And then I can stay focused on what's interesting to me.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, what you write about. And that's why I was attracted to you, what you, because I have been very fortunate to, you know, start my own business. And then I have used that to just basically stay focused on what I've been interested in. Mm-hmm. And then I've just taken one by one different areas of my interest, and then just stay focused.
Yeah. Why do you think that we so often, particularly, you know, when you're younger, end up with sort of a mismatch of talent and environment, and people kind of inaccurately determine what their passion is? This is very personal to me because I felt like it took the better part of 10 or 15 years before I started to figure out what I truly found engaging. And if I understood this, I would have made very different choices career-wise that I think would have led to much better outcomes. So I wonder, based on your experience, what is it that causes this mismatch for people?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's unfortunate, but I do think, you know, I think parents that have good will, I mean, I think it's really interesting for me as a parent too, because yes, you know, I want my child loves music and art, and I've supported that. But also the other part is like, you know, hey, I want my kid to support herself. So I think some of it comes from, you know, probably parents and society, you know, kind of giving people were, you know, messages about, you know, how we should live. And, you know, I think that's caused like a lot of, I've coached a lot of people. So I'm an executive coach. So I've coached many, many people. You're not alone. I mean, I would say, many people I've coached, you know, just, I mean, there's not enough direction. So this is something I'm thinking about, like people that are even getting out of college, you know, talking to other peers about how do we support people to kind of spend some energy on what really is interesting. A lot of things you don't even know. There are many options that people haven't been exposed to.
Yeah,
It's really quite a challenge, don't you think? I mean, I think people need to have, we need to invite people. That's why I call my company Potentials, you know, trying to think, how do we help everybody to think about what are your gifts, what interests you, and how can you apply them? I don't think it's easy.
Yeah.
I mean, it took me quite some time. I started an MBA program. I started an administrative program. I started different programs, and I kept on searching to find, and it was difficult and painful during this period. You know, even though I had this great corporate job, I didn't feel like it was where I wanted to be. I wasn't using all my talents, and it was actually a wonderful opportunity, but I didn't know how I'd get out of there. You know, it took a lot of reflection and thinking. And I think that's what we need to do now. We need to give, and that's why it's great that coaching is so much more available now. Mm-hmm. But I don't think people know how to, really, it takes some work, I think, to reflect and really, and then have support, have courage to try different things.
Yeah. I think the other thing that to me is kind of sad is that the default filter for indulging in one's curiosity is this going to be a skill that allows me to pad my resume? Will it make me rich or will it make me famous? And amazingly enough, those sort of questions of what's the practicality of this actually limit in my mind what is possible in terms of what you might find engaging.
You're absolutely right. I mean, I think, and I think it's even getting worse nowadays because I'm here, you know, even with, you know, my daughter, I'm thinking, okay, we have to be thinking of just college themes. You know, what classes do you have to take? I mean, I think it's really a problem what's happening, even of these high school kids. There's so much pressure to take, you know, all these AP honor classes, which are great. But I think that we've really, come to a challenging period here for everybody. So it takes real support. I think everyone needs support. Mm-hmm. And I think you're absolutely correct that it's a challenge of how we've allowed people. Yeah. What's happening? I think that there's a feeling of competition, and that's a problem. I think that we do need to be competitive. We have to be competitive with ourselves. You know, we need to be thinking, what kind of life do I want to create? What kind of meaning can I create in my life? How can I use my skills? How can I develop skills? How can I experiment and try something, and then and then see if I like it or not? I don't think we're squeezing people, and it's very difficult. So I mean, I feel really sad, and it's so many people, but it's really not too late. I think that's the message I'd like to convey, that it's really not too late. People, I've worked with many people who have really reflected and moved in different directions than they originally felt when they felt stuck.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
So you've spoken quite a bit throughout the course of our conversation about perspective and being able to work with people who you have different perspectives from. How does that play out in an organization? How do we apply that to our lives? How do you develop the capacity to understand somebody's perspective, even if you don't necessarily agree with it? And how do you use that to improve performance within an organization?
Yeah, well, I do feel that this is probably one of the most essential skills that we need nowadays, because there's so much disruption, you know about the globalization, technical changes, and you know, the world feels kind of upside down. I mean, so many, and every company that I work with, they're having huge changes, need to change, you know, direction. So where people get in trouble is when there's not alignment, and where there's very different perspectives and people are not able to talk about it. And everyone's kind of, what really happens is at every level, even from the senior level, is people internally think they know where the organization's going or where the team's going, and they're operating out of their own perspective. And we don't really have the conversations with each other to really listen and to be creative. You know, what your podcast is about, how do we be creative together? And that's really where the creativity comes. It's from listening to the different perspectives and holding the space for the conversations. And I don't think many of us know how to have these conversations. I think it's we really get stuck in thinking my way is right and then pushing for my way. So I think the skill that's needed nowadays more than ever is to, I call it having an open mindset, and to be open and curious, and open-hearted, open-minded. I've tried to put together like a simple process to one is to show people that first that everybody has a different idea of what respect is. We think, oh, everybody knows, you know, you should say hello, but that, or you should, you know, the simplest things are what get us kind of hooked. If somebody, you know, says something abruptly, or somebody doesn't include us in a meeting, you know, what I find in organizations and in any families too, people say, well, they didn't include me in the meeting. Well, I'm not going to, you know, they can start talking negatively about that person to others. These are the simplest things, you know, and then we start having division between different groups. And then this creates a lot of negative energy, you know, in teams or in an organization, even in families, and we don't know how to get ourselves out of that. It just, you know, we don't like the person, and then I don't like them, I'm mad at them, and then in a sense, I'm not open to them, I don't speak with them, and then my reaction creates more negative energy. So the simple thing that I've come up with is talking about this, and literally just talking about respect. And recognizing that everybody is seeing something different. It's just our human nature, given about our backgrounds. You know how you always ask people about their background? Our background influences how we see things. There's so much data available. Because I came from a large family, I see things differently than somebody who didn't come from a large family. Because I majored in psychology and organizational development, I see change differently than somebody else. So I'm seeing things differently. But I'm assuming people see it my way, or I just think my way is right. And I expect people to follow suit. But instead, if I can catch myself and try it. So the simplest method is noticing my internal signal when I feel like, hey, I'm right, he's wrong. I catch myself, stop, step back, and shift into this other state, which I call the oasis state, or this open-minded state. And when I'm in that state, that's when I'm more open to possibilities, I am more creative, and that's when we're, you know, there's a lot of brain research that shows then that we're, you know, we have more oxytocin in our, more dopamine, we're more creative, and we can put things together in new ways. So it's actually being self-aware of when I'm in the judgment state, when I'm closed, and then shifting into this other state, which all of us can do. All of us have experiences of being in that open state, whether it's when we're in nature, when we're, when we're with certain people. We all, if we learn how to have to know, check in and be in that state, open, curious, reflective, then we are open to listen. So this is kind of what I try to do, is help people to see that we, the value of being in that state, shifting into that state. So I have this little model I developed called OASIS. It's just an acronym. It's an acronym for five steps, but it's also just a metaphor of like, are you, keep on checking in. Am I in this open OASIS state? When I'm in that state, then I'm in a more creative, state of possibilities. And that's when I can then have a conversation with others and we can more come to alignment. Would you like me to kind of go through?
Yeah, I do. It's so funny you mentioned alignment, because that literally was going to be my next question, is how do you get from openness to alignment?
Okay. And then, the first step really, let me go through this little process because that's how I do it. Either within ourselves or even like between two people or in a team, I use a simple OASIS process. I'll go through it with you because I think these are the elements, and I've only gotten this from years of observing and working with teams and groups. But first O is, I call O for observation. And this is really separating the facts or what we see from our assumptions. And everybody's seeing something different, you know. So I don't know if you've seen like a classic study where people are throwing balls to each other, basketballs, and people are asked to look at how many times the balls pass between people in white shirts. And in fact, while that's happening, a gorilla walks through the scene, and people don't even see the gorilla because they are focused on the white shirts and the ball passing. But there are many studies like this to show that we're all observing something different. So when you're aware of that, you begin to realize, okay, what's my observation? What am I paying attention to? So, and this is what happens in even interactions one-on-one. Okay, I'm noticing that he didn't say thank you, but he's noticing, you know, the 20 things he did for me, we're focused on different things. And that's causing different experiences. So O would be, let's say we're having a meeting and a team member did not come to the meeting, came half hour late for three times to the meeting. Mm-hmm. So I would then say, hey, I noticed to myself first and then later to the person, I noticed that you've come three times at 9:30 instead of 9. A is for awareness. What am I, that's really critical for emotional intelligence. What am I aware of? A lot of people are just acting out without really being conscious. What am I aware of? So I have the thoughts, I have emotions, and I have my background. So maybe I'm aware that I'm disappointed that the person's late because, so I'm feeling, maybe my assumption, my feelings are disappointment. My awareness is I'm concerned about the person being late and because my background is, hey, we're not getting, I assume because I'm on time, everybody should be on time. That's kind of my standard, what I learned when I grew up about being respectful. And then also we're not getting the work done because other people are now starting to come late. By being aware of my assumption, I always have thoughts, my assumptions, emotions, and I have my background, my standards. So that's useful to become aware of that. And I could decide whether I'm going to share or not. And the next letter is S, shift. That's when I notice if I'm in judgment. So if I'm thinking that this person, I have a judgment, they're not being respectful, or I think they're being rude, then if I'm in judgment, I'm not really able to take in, it's okay to be in judgment, but it's how do I act out on that? So noticing my judgment, I could decide, well, I might not know everything. There might be more data here. Let me, I still can have my same reaction I would have had, but let me reflect and try to shift to being more open and curious, and maybe I'll learn something. So then for me, maybe I shift, I have different cues that help me remember how to be open. So all of a sudden right now, I'm shifting to being, I remember I was in Santorini, Greece on a holiday there, and I feel open and relaxed. So I can get my body, my mind, you probably just heard my voice even shift. So I make sure that I'm open. And then I would be important. So all this is done within me before I have my conversation. I is what's important to me here. Well, what's most important is that the team feels like a team. This person is feels like a part of the team and is contributing, and that we get our work done on Project Z. So that's important to me. I might guess what's important to the other person. Well, I assume that they might have something else going on. I assume that being part of the team is important to them. And then what's important to us? I assume that he also wants our team to succeed because we need to get this project done. And obviously he's a part of the team and he'll have a good job if he stays continuing to work with us. And last S is solution. What can be some options? I might come up with a couple options, but then I'll wait till I have my conversation with him. But I always separate understanding or I importance from the last S, which is what is our solution? What are our agreements? What are we going to do? So I kind of do this internal work with my, I don't need to do it in every conversation, but those that are more difficult. Mm-hmm. And then now I'd go back and talk to the person. I would say, hey, Jerry, I noticed that you've come at 9:30 instead of 9 the last three meetings. And then I could share my assumptions. I said, I'm concerned. We need your input on the team for our Project Z. And now other people are starting to come late. I'm trying to be open. My intention is to understand what's going on with you. And Jerry says, well, Ann, don't you remember that I was going, that I'm going to this class? And now I have another problem. Hey, I didn't know about that. And now I say, hey, I wish you would have told me. And then he reminds me that he did send me an email, but I didn't pay attention to it. And so I say, okay, well, let's think about it. What can we do here? You know, we need your input. So can you, and we begin to I give him empathy. I is where we do all of the skills of empathy, understanding. And I learned that this workshop is important to him. It's part of his goals. He appreciates that we need to get Project Z done. We really understand each other. And then we start exploring options. So what can we do? You can come. Maybe he sends his notes in from somebody else. Maybe he calls us in by cell phone. Maybe we change the time of the meeting. So we talk about different options. And then we agree, okay, what are we going to do? We're going to change the meeting. For the next three times, we'll start the meeting at 9:30. He will go and talk to other people about it, and I'll send out an email. So these are simple things that you all do naturally when things are going well. Mm-hmm. These are the elements of good communication when things are not so easy.
Yeah. How do you apply this framework to navigating crisis? For example, let's say a business hits a financial setback or you're dealing with a person who's underperforming. How would you apply it in that context?
Basically, I would use the same process like with a leadership team. So say they're in crisis, which a lot of companies I'm working with are now these days. So basically, one of the big problems, say, in a crisis is that people aren't aligned, that they have different views on how things should be. They're not really sharing what's going on with them. So if I'm working with a leadership team, I give them this process. And then we simply say, okay, what are people observing? Because they're all in different roles. Someone's in the field, someone's in headquarters. They're talking to different customers, different clients. So O would be sharing, like, what are you noticing? What are you noticing about this crisis? A would be, okay, what do we assume? What are you assuming about it? What are you feeling? What, based on your background, whether you're a lawyer, whether you're a marketing person, what are you aware of? How do we make sure that we are open? People are, sharing whether, their anxiety. And I work with people to know how to get into this open state. And we collectively agree that we want to be in this open, state. That's the best way to make things happen. And then we go through importance. What do people see as important to each other? Listen, make sure people are listening. I kind of guide that, make sure they're listening. And then we always agree on what have we agreed to do. So we're going to, what are our next steps? The last S is what are we going to see? Who's going to do what? How do we know? So it's kind of a way of ensuring, because a lot of times that's the problem in groups is that people all leave a meeting. They all think there has been agreement, but they haven't yet agreed on what's the observation that we'll see from each other. So that would be, in a sense, people have, the real thing is, once the group understands this, you don't even really, it's less important to go through these letters as much as creating this openness. And that's what, as a consultant, I do is I bring in the, I feel like this is what I think leaders should do nowadays in crisis, is bring in this openness. I think that's really, to me, the key now being an effective leader is how do we bring in, because the world's a little crazy right now with so many dynamics and uncertainty, how do we bring in this openness? That's what leaders, the more leaders can bring this in, then people can relax and have more access to their potential, their brain, more, and can be more creative.
So how do you get from there to uncovering people's potential, but more than potential, how do you transform potential into performance?
Good. Well, I mean, I think the way I think about it is like in organization, how do we create, you know, or in a community, the way I think about it is it's like the climate we need to create is there has to be a sense of fairness. So people need to feel like a sense of safety. There has to be a sense. If people don't feel like there's fairness, then that creates anxiety and a lot of stress. So that would be the first step, like in an organization. And then this issue of respect, you know, understanding that people have different needs and being open to meeting those different needs. So there's some people need to work, have flexible hours. Everyone, how do you create that kind of openness? And then the potential is how do you how do we then allow people to experiment? I mean, the way to really achieve our potential is creating the environment. If we have those first two things, kind of the fairness, the sense of respect, then we need to give people opportunities to try things. You know, if we're developing leaders, you know, we want to, look for, give them, like maybe they haven't tried a startup, let them start, as many different experiences as we can give people. That's really how you asked earlier, how do we begin to feel, to understand what we might enjoy, what might be our talent? We get that feedback from others on what other people see as our talent. Sometimes we need that external feedback, like from a coach, from the team members. If I'm coaching an individual, I actually ask around. I would talk to their peers and I ask people, like, what do you see as Srini's gift? What do you see as his, are his unique abilities and skills? What do you see? Often the individual may not be aware of what those are. And then I do more. I encourage other people to encourage Srini. Like, how can you help him to even do more of this? If you think he's got ability to talk in front of a group, how do you support him more? I encourage people, like in a leadership team or in a management group or a team, I really try to shift the energy. A lot of times people feel like they're competing, which is the case, but try to shift that energy into, and I think that's what, as a coach or as a consultant or as a manager and a leader, that's actually the biggest thing we do. We can change the energy and environment, and we have to start with ourselves, being open ourselves, being kinder to ourselves, take care of ourselves. When we're too tired, it's hard to do. We're too stressed, it's hard to do. But if I do believe that it's a simple answer is bring in that energy, then enables others to excel and develop their skills. And then, of course, we need to, give people feedback. And I use this OASIS process as another way of giving people feedback. And because a lot of times people don't have the courage, managers don't have the courage to really tell people, this is what I see you're really good at. This may be not be your strength. You know, either you can work on it and develop it. But the more we can get people to really be acting on what their natural strengths are, I mean, that's really, you've heard about strength finders and other pieces. That's really a wonderful way to go. When we're then we feel like we're in a more creative zone when we're using some of the things that we enjoy doing.
Wow. Wow. Well, you have packed this with a lot of really, really thought-provoking and valuable insights, many of which I think I'm going to have to go back to and really review in detail, just because this is one of those conversations that just has me thinking, and I'm kind of left with more questions than answers, which I think is a good thing. So I have one last question for you, which I know you've heard me ask. What do you think it is that makes somebody or something unmistakable?
That's such a great question. I think that is really what we're all trying to achieve. I do feel that that we need to be aware. People that are aware, that are checking in internally, they have emotional intelligence, so they're able to check in and be aware. And those simple questions are like, what's happening with me? You know, what am I? So connecting with themselves and being able to pay attention to kind of the felt sense of what's going on within them. And then they have the ability to be present to others and really paying attention to others, what's happening with them. And then really being able to connect with, you know, this potential piece and being connecting with their creativity, you know, which is, I think, what you're about is how do we connect with that and to, so basically really being fully present, being ourselves. And then for me personally, it's really people that, you know, want to make a difference, you know, want to make the world better and make, you know, and contribute through their presence. Mm. That's really what excites me. Mm. I think we all have that potential.
Well, I think that that makes a really fitting end to our conversation. Where can people find out more about you, your work, and everything that you're up to?
Okay, thanks. Yeah, I have a website on my book, which is called oasisconversations.com. And my other website is potentials.com. And people can find me on LinkedIn and Van Aaron. So I just really appreciate the work you're doing and the contribution you're making to really, I think that you're right on about potential, encouraging people to finding their creative outlet. And I think that's a great service you're doing. So I want to thank you also. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And for everybody listening, we will wrap the show with that. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Unmistakable Creative Podcast. While you were listening, were there any moments you found fascinating, inspiring, instructive, maybe even heartwarming? Can you think of anyone, a friend or a family member who would appreciate this moment? If so, take a second and share today's episode with that one person, because good ideas and messages are meant to be shared.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The 4 Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving no matter how much technology evolves. We're talking about real differentiators here like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this: AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The 4 Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, K-E-Y-S. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. And download your free copy.